The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We are apparently getting closer to a prospect that has been promised, I'd say now, for about 70 years, which is vertically taking off aircraft, which means the reality of flying taxis may be a possibility. I should say, in this instance, it's vertically taking off aircraft in common use, powered by electricity. Kevin Byrne is with us. He's retired Lieutenant Colonel and airport safety and security expert. Kevin, we've had a lot of false dawns on this road. Is this one different?
Good morning, Anton. Well, we were going to see it in place, I suppose, for the Paris Olympics, and that didn't happen. And I saw this document, which went under the radar, so to speak, in June of this year, in fact. It's written by the Federal Aviation Administration. It's a thing called AC2117-4, type certification for powered lift. Now, I didn't know what powered lift meant, you know, so I looked it up anyway. And it has to do, really, as you mentioned, these strange-looking aircraft, which will be used, allegedly, for taking us hither and thither. They take off vertically, and then they convert the rotor blades, turn into propeller blades, and they pull it through the sky, and away we go. But the documentation to make them and design them has finally been issued, and all the manufacturers have to keep up with this. And it's been agreed that the EASA, the European Aviation Safety Agency, will look at this as well and take the American standards on board. So you're not going to get into something which I saw in Malaysia, which, to be honest, looked like an aircraft that had been converted from Hovermore I used to use to cut my grass, you know, that type of thing. So we're into aviation standards now, and that has its own implications in a strange kind of a way.
Now, to some extent, we already have these types of aircraft in production, because we had helicopters and we had fixed wing aircraft. And then the US military gave us the Osprey, which effectively combined the two.
That's right. And I think it was in this year, three of them flew across the Aviva to celebrate an American football match like that. And they're quite extraordinary things to watch, because they take off like helicopters. They fly along at high speed like fixed wing aeroplanes, and then they land again, because the actual entire engines and rotor blades, you know, go vertical again and you land. You can't land them in a straight line on a runway, because you'd break all the blades, do you know? And that has implications as well for our new designs. However, we're not talking about giant turboprop aircraft, you know, which is what they are. We're talking about electric versions of that, and it gets very complex in some ways, because this document I read is 63 pages long, not a far-side read. And the first thing they mention is the fact that they want cockpit voice recorders and flight data recorders installed. And that's kind of unusual, because it seems they want to sort of look at the accident reports, you know, or at least the analysis of accidents before the design comes out and starts flying.
So are we talking about vehicles where, like drones, all of the lift will come from rotors? Or are we talking about vehicles where there's an element of a fixed wing providing lift as well?
Well, sorry, we take off vertically and then they convert to fixed wing, and then they go back again to helicopter flying. So there is a question then, what kind of a license would you need to fly it? Now, these are not autonomous yet. In other words, I wouldn't get into one if it's flown by a computer, for example, or an autopilot, which has nobody, you know, no physical body behind it. And they may be as big as 10 or 18 seats. So they're talking about commercial value here in that regard. And that has its own implications, because they have to have, for example, in the case of electric supply, you have huge batteries supplying. It's a total electric aircraft. Therefore, you have to have enough power on board to do all the normal things, drive the blades, you know, change the shape of the aircraft as you go along, have the instrumentation, have your lights, have your navigation systems. And you also, in some cases, you might need pressurization. If that is the case, if you've got to fly above and through the clouds, you're going to have mechanics for that. You've got to seal it properly, and everything weighs. The other complication about battery-powered aircraft is, of course, they don't get any lighter. You know, if you went off to Dublin Airport today and flew to Dubai, the aircraft would be 50 or 60 tons lighter because the fuel has been used on the way. This won't happen with electric aircraft. The battery is pretty heavy to begin with, and it will remain heavy when you come into land. So you have design problems there as regards the undercarriage. The undercarriage has to be stronger than might be the case for a normal, you know, traditional aircraft at the moment.
Presumably also you face into diminishing returns. I mean, in biological terms, the swan is about as big as things get, because it ends up weighing more to make the skeleton heavier, and you can't get a much heavier flying bird. Is the same true when you look at these kind of vehicles? Does there come a point where the sheer weight of batteries and components makes it impractical to get bigger?
That's a fact. And this is where it's going to get a bit more complicated. If we forget about the vertical takeoff ones, even on the ones that will use a runway where they'll have probably 8 propellers pointing down, and you'll convert what looks like a normal aircraft to something battery powered. There comes a time, as you say, can you get the range out of it? They're talking about in the next 7-8 years, fixed wing aircraft with electric engines on board, using them in Canada and Norway. But the effective range is only 150 miles, which is not great, to be honest, for carrying 20 passengers. And the other point about that is you have to put in a reserve. All the aircraft we fly on commercially have to have reserves, because if the first airport is closed, which is sometimes the case, you have to divert. And where do you divert in places that doesn't have the range? You have to get another, 45 minutes, which means you're carrying extra energy on board in batteries that will never be used. They're there as a safety feature. That has implications for design as well, of course. And they're hoping, against hope, that somebody's going to invent a new type of battery. That's what's, driving all of the engineering at the moment. But I'm not sure, if it hasn't happened with motor cars yet, it might not be. Maybe it is around the corner. We have a super lightweight, strong battery that'll take 25,000 charges and run forever. But it hasn't come to fore quite yet.
And of course, the other challenge presumably is that thing of charging, because if you want to turn around a commercial airplane in 25 minutes, you can throw Jet A onto it fairly quickly. It's hard to charge a battery that fast.
That's perfect, Anton. You're hitting the nail on the head. To get efficiencies from aircraft, we have, with your Boeing 737 and your Boeing MAX, 25 turnarounds, which Boeing said 30 years ago couldn't be done. It is being done on a daily basis, because that's the efficiency you want to keep airfares down and keep costs down. If you've got to plug a machine in for 2 hours to get it charged up, you're sitting at a stand at an airport blocking it, if you know what I mean, and you're not getting the efficiencies out of it. You won't be flying it for 14 hours a day. There are other points too. We have to think about cooling. Some of the electric engines are terribly efficient. They're cooling, and they'll need to be sure that in whether it's in the desert or in the cold, climes of Norway or Canada, you can do that. You've also got to think about lightning strikes, exposure to heavy rain, even cold weather soaking, as it were, or icing conditions. All of these things have to be at the same standard for the electric aircraft as they are for the common garden type we use at the moment. And that is going to have design features, which have to be catered for. It's going to be heavy, first of all, and it has to be reliable, because we're not going to reduce the safety element of our electric aircraft any less than we have done so for the current trend of aircraft.
Now, when we're talking safety, obviously, if we're discussing fixed wing aircraft that have been converted to electric power, or that are largely traditional with electric power, you have the same safety elements there. The aircraft has a glide capacity. There's sort of an assumption with helicopters that they plummet out of the sky if the engine stops, but they can also glide. They can auto-rotate down if there's an engine
failure. They do indeed, yeah.
What about these? If it's halfway between one and the other and you get a sudden mechanical problem?
It's a problem we have to do. That's why I was mentioning, for example, if you might have come across Harrier jets in the past, they were shown some of the air shows here in Ireland. They were flown, at various air bases and so forth. The Harrier pilots did a 50-hour course in helicopters so they could get their little aircraft into tight spots in and out, which is something people forget about, So the same kind of training would be required. If you're flying along and suddenly you've got an electrical power failure in one of these new aircraft types, you have to put it into vertical because it can't land on a runway. So you've got to be able to do an emergency let down into a flat space. It would be done, and it will be done from that point of view, but you have to allow for the training and practice for it. And if, of course, there are accidents which kill people, there's always a huge spotlight put on the safety element of the design and the maintenance and so forth. And that's another point I mentioned. Critical parts and life-limited parts, they must be identified in the design of the aircraft and replaced, as is the case with, traditional aircraft today. But people tell us, of course, that there are far fewer moving parts in electric cars, for example, and they don't need as much, engineering and replacement and that kind of thing. And some of them have a notional life of 10,000 or 50,000 hours, whatever it might be. That has to be done, because we can't have an electrical component failing in the sky at 15,000 feet and not having implications of that. So it's a long way to go. It takes a long, long time to prove that a commercial aviation can be done to a certain level. For example, it took a couple of years to get people to be happy with the twin-engined aircraft across over water, as was the case with the Atlantic and the Pacific. But the vast majority of aircraft crossing oceans now only have two engines, you see. We've proven it can be done safely. So that will take time. So don't expect to jump on one of these things in the next 4 or 5 years. Maybe it'll be done experimentally, but I wouldn't buy a ticket on one of them quite yet.
Well, you mentioned the Harrier. The Harrier is almost the defining proof of the sheer level of technical complexity, because it took a huge amount of time to get that plane into service.
It did.
But it was something like 50 years before the F-35 did the same thing again. There's only been two real successful attempts at vertical into fixed-wing flight.
And, And that is one of the problems with vertical takeoff, because when you actually are, you're forcing thrust against weight, which means you're forcing the aircraft into the air. In other words, the engine derives more lift, more power than the aircraft weighs, but that uses vast quantities of fuel. The Harrier taking off, and they decided to stop doing it because it was using, you know, about a fifth of its fuel capacity just to get into the air. When it flew forward, it used far less fuel, and when it came into land, because it was lighter, it used far less fuel. But they then started to do short takeoff on the runway because it was just much more efficient. So to take off an electrical aircraft vertically will use a huge amount of the battery power. So we have to be careful about doing, you know, transition flights and then working out the range and then having the capacity to divert if things go wrong, you know. So it will happen. There's no, aviation has always moved forward in small and large jumps at the same time. But this particular one is not with us for a while yet. On the tiny aircraft front, the ones that go vertically only, there's only one of them certified yet, and that's the Chinese built, the little four-seater EH216, if you want to buy one. It's a passenger-carrying unmanned aerial vehicle, so it means it's flown by an autopilot. And it's been certified in China. I'm not sure the Americans and the Europeans will allow it to fly yet, but you can probably take a flight in one in China now. But until such times are proven, 2,000 or 3,000 hours of flying or more, I wouldn't go near one except to watch it from taking off from the sidelines, so to speak.
Kevin, thank you very much. That is Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel and airport safety and security expert.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.